Hi, and welcome to Dev Propulsion Labs, podcast about the business of developer tools hosted by Evil Martians. My name is Victoria, and I'm very excited to introduce today's guest. Please meet Adam Wenchel, the CEO and founder of Arthur AI. We've got a very exciting conversation unrolling in front of us, and I can't wait to get started. So, Adam, where do you find yourself these days? How do you kind of identify yourself? How do you introduce yourself? What do you tell people when you meet them for the first time?
Yeah, well, for starters, Victoria, thanks for having me on the podcast. Definitely excited to be here. I love the topic of dev tools. It's such a great topic. And so, you know, excited to be on this podcast. So my company, Arthur, co-founder of, we've been around for 6 years, and I feel like dev tools and AI are just now, even though AI has been around for a while, really starting to reach maturity. And, you know, a lot of credit goes to OpenAI and Anthropic and companies like those. You know, we started this company in 2019 in order to, you know, every model was custom built and custom deployed and custom infrastructure and things like that. Now you can just get an API key and you can start building. And so it's really like expanded this world of building with AI from a very select group of people at one place in an organization that were all PhDs in math to like any application team that, you know, is willing to put in the work to learn how to use AI and learn how to prompt engineer and hooked up vectorized data and things like that and understand kind of the fundamentals of agentic AI can start building. And it doesn't require a PhD in math anymore. And you don't have to stand up the infrastructure. You can just get an API key and run with it. And so it's an exciting time. You know, we've seen it through in the 6 years, you know, kind of go through different cycles. And I'm more excited today than I've been the entire 6 years.
Yeah, I feel like everybody is just buzzing with excitement. You know, I was just at the AI World Engineer Fair here in San Francisco, and I don't remember this kind of excitement in the room. You know, it feels very fresh. And I understand that you've been on this territory in this domain for a while now, for a few years. And I want to ask this question that I like to ask a lot, open source. So throughout your biography, I actually find that it's important for you to give back, right? There are a lot of moments where you give back to your university or you create a program for young entrepreneurs. You know, there is something that allows the community to thrive. And now with Arthur, you're open sourcing a lot. So I just want to know, why is it important for you to do that? And maybe even business-wise, do you think it makes sense for us to, you know, to leverage open source in AI specifically?
When I look at kind of the state of AI right now, there is a lot of buzz, but also for if you talk to the people who are, you know, you can create these really cool demos that work, like do these amazing things 90% of the time. That's causing all the buzz, right? And people are like either demoing like some hackathon project, or if they're in a big organization, demoing to the CEO this cool thing they've built. And then the reaction's like, all right, now make it real, get it ready for production. And that's where the challenge is, right? We call it the last mile kind of problem in AI right now, where you have to go from like working 90% of the time to working like 99% of the time, or, you know, whatever that threshold is to put it in production and feel good about it and actually have it create value. And so I think a lot of what are open source right now for us is like, you know, people are really stuck crossing this chasm. And so what we want to do is, it's best for us, best for the industry, it's best for anyone if like there's like an easier path to kind of like cross that last chasm and get into production. The more people have applications in production, the better it is for us, the better it is for the industry, the better, hopefully, if people are doing a good job, the better it is for everyone. And so that was really the impetus behind our most recent last couple open source projects is like, you know, really focused on the domain of evals, which are, you know, like in the old days of models where it would be like a binary classifier. Yes, it's a picture of a cat, or no, it's not. Or, you know, a regression model, which is like, you know, what's the average age of a visitor with this footprint, you know, that kind of thing. Was there was like these really well understood data science metrics. But when you're talking about generating text and answering questions, there's not like this, you know, it's kind of a new field, right? Like, how do you evaluate how good of a job they're doing? And it turns out that there's some generic notions of that, like how readable is this? How concise is it? How well does it answer the question? But then a lot of it comes down to domain specific, right? Or use case specific. So if you're doing a customer service bot, like, how quickly did you get to a place where the customer was like really happy with the outcome, or that you answered their question? And, you know, the way you kind of measure success in those domains, like, it's very specific. And so a lot of the work we're doing now is providing people the tools so that you can easily create those custom domain and use case specific evals for your particular application. And that's, we fundamentally believe that's the key to like closing this last mile and getting stuff into production and creating value with it.
I'm not an engineer myself, but I work with engineers and I'm kind of like this cheerleader for the engineer, right? I believe that open source can be commercialized, and that's one of the ways to do it sustainably, in my opinion, you know, because history knows great examples of engineers who were able to somehow commercialize open source, make their passion project into something that sustains them throughout their life and makes happy a bunch of engineers who are using the open source itself, right? What do you think about commercializing open source? Is that the path forward for us as an industry, or is just a wild dream of mine and nothing else?
Yeah, you know, this is a really complicated topic that we could talk about for hours. I think the nature of open source has changed a lot from when I was a developer. It was very community driven and people weren't trying to profit off it. And they were just like, you know, these big communities would spring up with the contributors from all over. And that still happens to some extent. But nowadays, it's much more common where you have like a primary benefactor, which is a company that hopes to get some commercial benefit for it, that's doing, you know, maybe 80 or 90% of the commits that are coming in are from that company. But that still creates like some really good, like a really good virtuous cycle, even in those situations, because number one, like I think developers take a lot of pride in having their code out. So it's good for morale on the team. Like everyone enjoys kind of creating open source software. It's a lot of fun. It also helps us attract amazing developers to the company because, you know, like really good developers like really like the idea of working on open source projects so that when they do something cool, they can send it to their friends or you know, get feedback on it, things like that. And so I think it also really helps with, you know, if people want to try out our software, they don't need to call a salesperson or schedule a demo or anything like that. They can just go to GitHub and download it and start playing around with it. And I think that that's like so critical. Like we were talking about earlier, we're seeing the number of developers who are building with AI just explode. And so, you know, rather than try to like have them all talk to salespeople, which most developers don't want to do anyways, just have them like, you know, try it out, play around with the software and see if it works for them.
I saw one of your kind of older posts about Arthur, and it showed some amazing growth, something like 500% in a year, something wild like that. As a venture-backed startup, do you experience a lot of pressure from the investors now when the market is like hotter than ever? Do you feel like you need to play the catch-up game now and like have to pivot and change what you're offering? Or because you already have so much kind of legacy built in this space, do you feel like you can rely on it heavily and navigate it with ease? How do you feel about what's going on?
You're asking some hard-hitting questions here, but I'm happy to answer. So in the 6 years that since we started this company, there has been a lot of change, and we've 100% had to evolve with the industry. You know, when we started, it was all kind of traditional AI, you know, classifiers and recommender systems and things like that. And that's still a big part of our business. And those systems still create a ton of business value. Most new energy at a lot of organizations is going into generative and agentic AI. And so we've certainly been very quick to like support the developers on that journey. And the challenges are different, you know? And in terms of the venture capital industry, like this has been pretty well documented, but it's gone through some pretty wild swings in the last, during that time. And, you know, I think there was, in particular with like zero interest rate policy, you know, really drove a huge like influx of venture capital in like 2021. And there was a lot of pressure for a while. I think interestingly with like just everything that's gone on in the world, like I think venture capitalists have sort of like realized that they actually, there were a lot of companies that were under pressure from their VCs to grow that that kind of blew up because it was just unsustainable. And I think that's happened enough that, you know, I think they realized that they were part of the problem and they caused some like really talented startups to struggle. And so I feel like they all had a front row seat to like what happens if you like put too much pressure on a startup to grow too quickly a couple of years ago. And so I think people are being a little more thoughtful now than they were.
So I see a lot of great educational materials from Arthur. You create amazing, you know, articles and easy to follow YouTube guides, you know, for people to actually start implementing AI into their workflows, creating agentic flows, et cetera. How do you find kind of like matters that are interesting to engineers? Because there's so much material available on how to create an MCP, how to do this, how to do that. How do you manage to stand out and create something that's actually valued by engineers that, you know, read your materials or watch your videos?
I think it's just that culturally at Arthur, we're like really passionate and intellectually curious about this stuff. And there is always new things coming out. And, you know, you mentioned we had some YouTube explainer videos on agentic AI that were like when it very first started to come out before everyone was talking about it, we put out, and those ended up getting, you know, thousands and thousands of views. They were the first ones out there. Now there's a lot. And I think similar with MCP, Zach, my colleague, our CTO, he, you know, he put out some great stuff on MCP, and that's really taken off now. And so I don't know if we're like trend spotters or what, but we like reading about this stuff. And when something piques our interest, we like to write about it or do a video about it. And, you know, more often than not, it ends up, you know, becoming a really big thing, which is fun. I think all of us on our team were kind of one of the reasons we're attracted to working in the AI field is that pace of change, right? If you're the kind of person who likes constantly learning new things, then it's great. I think the flip side of that, of course, is, you know, it's funny, like traditional startup concepts like product market fit are kind of interesting in the AI world, because like you can find product market fit today, but 6 months from now, you may not have it anymore because the market's just changing so quickly.
You are the CEO of the company, right? But you have engineering background. I think often in developer tools, we find that two co-founders, both technical, one more on the business side, one more on the technical side. Have you found that kind of like secret of success? What makes a perfect partnership? What are the areas that are the most kind of difficult for you as somebody with an engineering background as a CEO? What do you think makes the perfect kind of like technical CEO of a dev tool startup?
I don't know what makes the perfect CEO, but I do. You know, I was a developer for a long time. It's been a few years. My last company was acquired in 2015 by Capital One. And, you know, I would say like some point around that time, I probably became a lot less hands-on and more of a, you know, kind of business leader. And so for me, though, like I definitely lean on that, like that technical background all the time. I've certainly had to embrace learning, you know, and doing a lot of reading and growth around managing sales teams and marketing teams, That's not, you know, it's a different skill set, not one that I kind of like started my career really focused on. And so, you know, I'm fortunate to have a lot of smart people on the team, as well as advisors and kind of mentors to help kind of scale that learning curve. But it's certainly for technical founders, that's the challenge. Just like for business founders, understanding the technology is challenging. You know, no one's great at everything.
Let's talk about the acquisition a little bit. So as a founder of your own startup, you know, how does it feel to be acquired by a big company where you're now part of this big system and everything has changed? What did you find was great and what was more like on the difficult side for you?
At the time we were a 5-person company. So going from that to a, you know, at the 50,000 person company was a wild ride. And it was interesting. I would say that probably the biggest takeaway was like the skills that make you really like a great startup person are like very counterproductive in a large organization. Like in a, you know, at a startup, it's much more about like, you know, I can run through walls. I can, you know, I can like lock myself in a closet and like spend 2 days writing this piece of code that does something really cool. Whereas at a large company, you know, there's in order to get like a large company to work together, you have to spend a ton of time talking with your peers and making sure that you're building consensus and all these activities that at startup, you know, they take 10 seconds, but at a large company, they can take weeks or months. And if you don't invest that time, you're kind of like off doing your own thing and you're out of step with everyone else. And so it took me, you know, probably a year to kind of like really learn that lesson. And I think I accidentally burned some bridges, not too badly, luckily pissing people off during that time, just not on purpose, not because I was trying to do anything malicious, just because I didn't know how to operate in a big company. The light bulb did go off eventually. And I spent the second year kind of like mending fences and really kind of learning from that. And, you know, and then was there for a year after that as well. The other thing I'll say is, as someone who's worked for enterprise startups a few times, you know, beforehand, prior to working in an enterprise, you know, when we were working with a customer, a lot of times they would come and like do things or say things that just seemed kind of irrational or didn't make sense to me. But then once you work inside a large enterprise, it just gives you so much more empathy for like what people in an enterprise have to do and think about and all these considerations that you don't have at startups that they have to think about. And so I think that's been one of the things that's been helpful for us at Arthur is that, you know, there's a couple of us on the team who do have at least a little bit of enterprise experience, and it's easier to kind of have empathy for like what it takes to be successful with it as a technologist at a large company.
So does that experience help you with doing enterprise sales at Arthur? Like, does it help you train your team on how to approach this kind of customers and what they're looking for type of thing?
100%. Yeah. Like, you know, I think that's a big part of the battle on enterprise sales is like understanding each organization is different and they're all very complex and there's dotted lines and solid lines everywhere. And there's, you know, typically there's like 6 AI teams that are all claimed to be like the AI team for the company and things like that, which, but they, you know, they all have a slightly different mandate and kind of like being able to make sense of that is, I think it's difficult if you're, especially for people who are earlier in their career, because it's like just these really complex organizational structures. But once you've been doing it for a while, you kind of pick up on patterns. And I think that's a really critical part to, like, you know, when you go in to talk to these people, if it comes across that you kind of understand what they're going through, what they have to deal with, and like how you can help them, you can tell that story effectively. It's extremely helpful.
How do you envision a software engineer's day in 10 years? Like, how do you think is going to change their flow?
We're huge AI users internally, you know, Cursor and a bunch of Vercel and a bunch of other tools that our developers use. You know, a year ago, we were kind of playing around with them and would occasionally use them and, you know, would occasionally get a boost. But there was a point about 6 months ago, where 7-8 months ago, I don't remember exactly when, but we just said, hey, we got to go all in, because it's they're really starting to get good. And they've only gotten better since then. And so, you know, we've seen a big boost in developer productivity. And I think it's like really transformative, not just like the software world overall, but in particular in the startup world, because I think there's like big complex companies like ERP systems or CRM systems that were sort of seen as like unassailable by startups or general ledger systems, because they would take so much money and work to kind of replicate and build something that's valuable, because they're just these sprawling complex systems. You know, there's a potential now that like with a relatively small team of developers that you could actually build something like that out, right? And it's really changing the economics of startups. Like, people are just doing so much more with much smaller teams. And I think it's still early days for the technology. So 10 years from now, I don't think anyone can accurately predict it. But, you know, I think you're going to have a few technical experts who actually deeply understand like the full stack, from the software, the hardware layer, and like systems, like infrastructure layer. Because when something goes wrong, you still need to figure it out. Although, you know, AI is getting better at that too. But you become kind of a coach, right, for the coding bots. And, you know, the better your coaches are, the better the product you get. But, you know, you don't need a 50-person football team. You need like 4 or 5 really good coaches to like, that can coach the AI into producing a good product. We're not quite there yet, but that feels like where it's going.
So there is this heated debate that AI is going to eliminate juniors and, you know, middle level engineers in companies. But to become senior, you need to be junior, you know, you need to be middle at some point. So what do you think junior path is going to change? Like, what will these software engineers do?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I, you know, as you mentioned, I work with my University of Maryland that has a great computer science program, a very large computer science program too. And, you know, there's been a lot of data out there about how, for the first time in a long time, computer science, the kind of placement rate for brand new computer science grads is like, it's still pretty good, but it's like not quite as strong as it's historically been. And so I do think that we're probably at peak computer scientists, is my guess, in terms of like the number of new computer scientists that are getting, you know, minted every year. That's one of those things that's over the years has had some ups and downs. It feels like we're probably at the peak computer scientist production right now. And so there'll be fewer of them. And my guess is like, it'll just create a higher bar for like getting employment. You know, there's a balance between like, you want people who can use AI tools really well, like Cursor, but at the same time, you're more valuable if you understand what's going on underneath the hood and like have, and I think that's why like a lot of senior developers are becoming so valuable, is because they've done all this stuff by hand. Those are really effective coaches now for the AI. But the only way you build up that coaching ability is by like not being overly reliant on these tools. At the same time, I remember when I was coming out with my computer science degree and going out as a junior developer and having the senior developers like kind of like looking down at me because we, you know, compiler like or assembly code, like there's microarchitecture assembly code had been kind of was being phased out of a lot of curriculums. You know, a lot of these developers are like, you don't know what the compiler is doing. You don't understand assembly. Like, there's no way you're not going to be valuable. You know, you're not going to have to build. And that it ended up not being that important to like my generation of developers. So, you know, maybe this will be like that. We'll see.
Do you find that students, like fresh students, use AI differently than we do? Do they approach it differently?
Definitely. Yeah, there's a comfort level with, I find, you know, even my son who's in middle school, like, you know, just there's like a comfort level using these tools that, not that like more senior developers can't get that comfort level, but it's just, it's amazing like how natural they are using these tools for all sorts of tasks. And yeah, it's pretty cool to see.
What's your dream for Arthur? Let's say in 10 years, what Arthur is?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it's always been about like just helping people achieve really good outcomes with AI, right? And so we always say AI that works for everyone, which is both the people who are, you know, the companies that are trying to put it in place to accomplish a purpose, but also, you know, we've all been on the you know, customer end of like working with some AI tool that like is infuriating because it doesn't work properly. And so we want to make sure that it like works properly for the people who are using it as well, and ideally better. I think there's a belief among some companies that like they can actually have like for customer service and things like that can over time create a better experience for people because, you know, we've all been part of human-based like customer service flows that have sometimes are quite frustrating as well. And so, you know, really trying to make it work better for everyone.
What do you think makes the perfect developer tool? What are some maybe like top three qualities that a developer tool should have?
Simplicity is by far the number one, right? I think that if you have a little bit of like something that's clever, you know, just like a little bit clever, like I feel like that developers always kind of like love that, you know, it's like, oh, that's clever. I'm going to like check it out. It like hooks them. Simplicity and just like a sprinkle of cleverness, I think are probably the top two. If I have to come up with a third, I don't know. I'll think about a third, but those are my top two.
My last question that I like to ask all my guests is kind of what I call a warm, fuzzy question. What is something that makes you feel great about what you're doing right now? So building Arthur or, you know, leading some educational initiatives. What makes you feel great?
For me, I think I get a lot of energies from community. So it's like the team I'm working with at Arthur are great. And, you know, same thing with working with University of Maryland at school. Like I had the opportunity to mentor some students. There's a student incubator that was actually established by the Mokhtar Zadar brothers who founded a company called Truebill, which Rocket Money is now Rocket Money. And they established this really cool incubator. And so like, it's been amazing to see what some of these student groups can do. A lot of them are building with new generative and agentic AI. And, you know, to your question about like how quickly they adopt and like really change their thinking, like it's a whole different way of thinking about software development and about application architectures. And so it's been really fun to see like how, you know, they don't come into it with like, I've been doing things the same way for like 20 years and I have to change my habits. It's like all brand new. And that's been fascinating to watch.
If people were to try Arthur, what's the easiest way to do that?
Yeah. So you can go on, you know, GitHub, we have our open source evals engine, and then you can sign up. We also have a platform that provides a lot more kind of dashboarding and visualization and what we call continuous eval. So like, you know, if you want to have something that's running and continuously evaluating performance on there, basically the open source component is the evals engine. And you can run that locally. It's really great for kind of developer workflows. But then, you know, when you're ready to go to production, you can kind of just flip a switch and then you start getting seeing those metrics in like an ongoing, what we call continuous eval. So if you're familiar with the concept of continuous development from the software world, we've established that same kind of paradigm, but for evals so that you can kind of continuously, as you're rolling out changes and updates and patches, like you make sure that the performance is getting better and better over time.
Thank you so much, Adam. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and I wish you the best of luck with Arthur. We will be rooting for your success.
So. Yeah, thank you, Victoria. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for catching yet another episode of Dev Propulsion Labs. We at Evil Martians transform growth stage startups into unicorns, build developer tools, and create open source products. If your developer tool needs help with product design, development, or SRE, visit evilmartians.com/devtools. See you in the next.